Let me put it like this, said Cheery. If these rats have been poisoned with lead instead of arsenic, you'd have been able to sharpen their noses and use them as pencils. She lowered the beaker. Are you sure? Said Carrot. Yes. We Mad Arthur wouldn't poison rats, would he? Especially not rats that were going to be eaten. I have heard he doesn't like dwarfs much, said Angla. Yes, but business is business. No one who does a lot of business with dwarfs likes them much, and he must supply every dwarf cafe and delicatessen in the city. Maybe they ate arsenic before he caught them, said Angla. People use it as a rat poison, after all. Yes, said Carrot, in a very deliberate way. They do. You're not suggesting that veterinary tucks into a nice rat every day, said Angla. I have heard he uses rats as spies. So I don't think he uses them as elevensies, said Carrot. But it'd be nice to know where Wee Mad Arthur gets his from, don't you think? Commander Vimes said he was looking after the veterinary case, said Angua. But we're just finding out why Gimlet's rats are full of arsenic, said Carrot innocently. Anyway, I was going to ask Sergeant Colton to look into it. But Wee Mad Arthur? Said Angua. He's mad. Fred can take Nobby with him. I'll go and tell him. Cheery? Yes, Captain. You've been trying to hide your face from me. Oh, did someone hit you? No, sir. Only your eyes look a bit bruised, and your lips... I'm fine, sir, said Cheery desperately. Oh, well, if you say so, I'll look for Sergeant Colin, then. He backed out, embarrassed. That left the two of them. All girls together, thought Angua. One normal girl between the two of us, at any rate. I don't think the mascara works, Angua said. The lipstick's fine, but the mascara, I don't think so. I think I need practice. You sure you want to keep the beard? You don't mean shave, Cheery backed away. All right, what about the iron helmet? It belonged to my grandfather. It's dwarfish. Fine, okay. You've made a good start anyway. What do you think of this, said Cheery, handing her a bit of paper. Angua read it. It was a list of names, although most of them were crossed out. Cheery Little Bottom, crossed out. Cheery, crossed out. Sherry, crossed out. Sherry, crossed out. Lucinda Little Bottom. Shari, crossed out. Sherry, crossed out. Cherry. What do you think? Said Cheery nervously. Lucinda, said Angua, raising her eyebrows. I've always liked the sound of the name. Sherry is nice, said Angua. And it is rather like the one you've got already. The way people spell it in this town, no one will actually notice unless you point it out to them. Cherry's shoulders sagged with released tension. When you've made up your mind to shout out who you are to the world, it's a relief to know that you can do it in a whisper. Sherry, thought Angua. Now, what does that name conjure up? Does the mental picture include iron boots, iron helmet, a small worried face, and a long beard? Well, it does now. Somewhere underneath Ankh-Morpork, a rat went about its business, ambling unconcernedly through the ruins of a damp cellar. It turned a corner towards the grain store it knew was up ahead, and almost walked into another rat. This one was standing on its hind legs, though, and wearing a tiny black robe and carrying a scythe. Such of its snout that could be seen was bone white. Squeak! It said. Then the vision faded and revealed a slightly smaller figure. There was nothing in the least rat-like about it, apart from its size. It was human, or at least humanoid, or at least humanoid. It was dressed in rat-skin trousers, but was bare above the waist, apart from two bandoliers that crisscrossed its chest, and it was smoking a tiny cigar. It raised a very small crossbow and fired. The soul of the rat, for anything so similar in so many ways to human beings, certainly had as a soul, watched gloomily as the figure took its recent habitation by the tail and towed it away. Then it looked up at the death of rats, who appeared a lot more solid now. "Squeak," it said. The grim squeaker nodded. "Squeak." A minute later, wee Mad Arthur emerged into the daylight, dragging the rat behind him. There were 57 neatly lined up along the wall, but despite his name, wee Mad Arthur made a point of not killing the young and the pregnant females. "It's always a good idea to make sure you've got a job tomorrow." His sign was still tacked up over the hole. Wee Mad Arthur, as the only insect and vermin exterminator able to meet the enemy on its own terms, found that it paid to advertise. Sorry, I need to look closely at this. Wee Mad Arthur. For those little things that get you down. Rats free. Mice, 1 cent per 10 tails. Moles, 0.5 cent each. Wasps, 50 cents per nest. Hornets, 20 cents extra. Cockroaches and similar by arrangement. Small fees, big jobs. Arthur took out the world's smallest notebook and a piece of pencil lead. "See here, now, 58 skins at 2 a penny. City bounty for the tails at 1 penny per 10. And the carcasses to Gimlet at tuppence per 3. The hard-driving dwarf bastard that he was. There was a moment's shadow, and then someone stamped on him. "Right," said the owner of the boot. "Still catching rats without a guild card, are you? Easiest $10 we ever earned, Ron. Let's go in." The man was lifted several inches off the ground, whirled around, and hurled against the wall. His companion stared as a streak of dust raced across his boot, but reached too late. "He's gone up me trouser! He's gone up me arr!" There was a crack. "Me knee! Me knee! He's broken me knee!" The man who had been flung aside tried to get up, but something scurried across his chest and landed astride his nose. "Hey, pal," said wee Mad Arthur. "Can your mother sew, pal?" "Yeah? Then get her to stitch this one." He grabbed an eyelid in each hand and thrust his head forward with pinpoint precision. There was another crack as the skulls met. The man with the broken knee tried to drag himself away, but wee Mad Arthur leapt from his stunned comrade and proceeded to kick him. The kicks of a man not much more than 6 inches high should not hurt, but wee Mad Arthur seemed to have a lot more mass than his size would allow. Being nutted by Arthur was like being hit by a steel ball from a slingshot. A kick seemed to have all the power of one from a large man, but very painfully concentrated into a smaller area. "You can tell from buggers at the Rat Catchers Guild that I works for who's I want and charges what I like," he said between kicks. "And them shites can stop trying to persecute the small businessmen." The other guild enforcer made it to the end of the alley. Arthur gave Ron a final kick and left him in the gutter. Wee Mad Arthur walked back to his task. Shaking his head, he worked for nothing and sold his rats for half the official rate. A heinous crime, yet we, Mad Arthur, was growing rich because the guild hadn't got its joint heads around the idea of fiscal relativity. Arthur charged a lot more for his services, a lot more, that is, from the specialized and above all, low point of view of wee Mad Arthur. What Ankh Morpork had yet to understand was that the smaller you are, the more your money is worth. A dollar for a human bought a loaf of bread that was eaten in a few bites. That same dollar for wee Mad Arthur bought the same size loaf, but it was food for a week and could then be farther hollowed out and used as a bedroom. The size differential problem was also responsible for his frequent drunkenness. Few publicans were prepared to sell beer by the thimbleful or had gnome-sized mugs. Wee Mad Arthur had to go drinking in a swimming costume, but he liked his work. No one could clear out rats like Wee Mad Arthur. Old and cunning rats that knew all about traps, deadfalls, and poison were helpless in the face of his attack, which was where, in fact, he often attacked. The last thing they felt was a hand gripping each of their ears, and the last thing they saw was his forehead approaching at speed. Muttering under his breath, Wee Mad Arthur got back to his calculations, but not for long. He spun around, forehead cocked. "It's only us, Wee Mad Arthur," said Sergeant Cullen, stepping back hurriedly. "That's Mr. Wee Mad Arthur to use, copper," said Wee Mad Arthur, but he relaxed a little. "We're Sergeant Cullen and Corporal Nobby," said Cullen. "Yeah, you remember us, don't you?" said Nobby in a wheedling voice. "We was the ones who helped you when you was fighting them three dwarfs last week. You just pulled me off of them." "If that's what you mean," said Wee Mad Arthur, "just when I'd got them all down." "We want to talk to you about some rats," said Cullen. "Can't take on any more customers," said Wee Mad Arthur firmly. "Some rats you sold to Gimlet's Whole Food Delicatessen a few days ago." "What's that to you?" "He reckons they was poisoned," said Nobby, who had taken the precaution of moving behind Cullen. "I never uses poison." Cullen realized he was backing away from a man 6 inches high. "Yeah, well, see, thing is, you being in fights and all that, you don't get on with dwarfs. Some people might say, thing is, it could look like you might have a grudge." He took another step back and almost tripped over Nobby. "Grudge? Why should I have a grudge, pal? It ain't me that gets the kicking," said Wee Mad Arthur, advancing. Good point, said Cullen. "Only it'd help, right, if you could tell us where you got those rats from. Like the Patrician's Palace, maybe," said Nobby. "The palace? No one catches rats in the palace. That's not allowed." "No, I remember those rats. They were good fat ones. I wanted a penny each, but he held out for 4 for 3 pence. The old skinflint that he is." "Where did you get them, then?" Wee Mad Arthur shrugged. "Down the cattle market. I do the cattle market Tuesdays. You couldn't tell you where they came from. Them tunnels goes everywhere. See." "Could they've eaten poison before you caught them?" said Cullen. Wee Mad Arthur bristled. "No one puts down poison round there. I wouldn't have it, see. I got all the contracts along the shambles, and I won't deal with any gobshite who uses poison. I doesn't charge for extermination, see? Guild hates that, but I chooses me customers." Wee Mad Arthur grinned wickedly. "I only goes where there's the finest eating for the rats, and I clean up flogging them to the lawn ornaments. I find anyone using poison on my patch, they can pay guild rates for guild work, and see how they like it. I can see you're going to be a big man in industrial catering," said Cullen. Wee Mad Arthur put his head on one side. "Do you know what happened to the last man that made a crack like that?" he said. No, said Colin. Neither does anyone else, said Wee Mad Arthur. Because he was never found. Have yous finished? Only I got a wasp's nest to clean out before I go home. So you were catching them under the shambles, Colin persisted. All the way along. So good beat. There's tanners, tallowmen, butchers, sausage makers. That's good grazing if you're a rat. Yeah, right, said Colin. Fair enough. Well, I reckon we've taken up enough of your time. How'd you catch wasps, said Nobby, intrigued. Smoke them out? 'Tis unsporting not to hit them on the wings, said Wee Mad Arthur. But if it's a busy day, I make up squibs out of the number one black powder of the alchemist's cell. He indicated the laden bandoliers over his shoulders. You blow them up, said Nobby. That doesn't sound too sporting. Yeah? Just ever try setting and lighting half a dozen fuses and then fighting your way back out of the entrance before the first one goes off? It's a wild goose chase, Sarge, said Nobby as they strolled away. Some rats ate some poison somewhere, and he got them. What are we supposed to do about it? Poisoning rats ain't illegal. Colin scratched his chin. I think we could be in a bit of trouble, Nami, he said. I mean, everyone's been bustling around detecting, and we could end up looking a right couple of noddies. I mean, do you want to go back to the yard and say, we talked to Wee Mad Arthur, and he said it wasn't him. End of story. We're humans, right? Well, I am, and I know you probably are. And we're definitely bringing up the rear around here. I'm telling you, this ain't my watch anymore, Nobby. Trolls, dwarfs, gargoyles, I've nothing against them. You know me, but I'm looking forward to my little farm with chickens round the door. And I wouldn't mind going out with something to be proud of. Well, what do you want us to do? Knock on every door round the cattle market and ask them if they've got any arsenic in the place? Yep, said Colin. Walk and talk. That's what Vimes always says. There's hundreds of them. Anyway, they'd say no. Right, but we got to arsk. Tain't like it used to be. Nobby, this is modern policing. Detecting. These days, we got to get results. I mean, the watchers. The watch is getting better, bigger. I don't mind old Detritus being a sergeant. He's not bad when you get to know him. But one of these days, it could be a dwarf giving out orders, Nobby. It's all right for me, because I'll be out on my farm. Nailing chickens round the door, said Nobby. But you've got your future to think about. And the way things are going, maybe the watch will be looking for another captain. It'd be a right bugger if he turned out to have a name like Strong in the Army. Or Shale. So you'd better look smart. You never wanted to be a captain, Fred. Me? A officer? I have my pride, Nobby. I have nothing against officering for them as is called to it. But it's not for the likes of me. My place is with the common man. I wish mine was, said Nobby gloomily. Look what was in my pigeonhole this morning. He handed the sergeant a square of cards, which with cold edging. Lady Salachi will be at home this p.m. From 5 onwards, and request the pleasure of the company of Lord Denobs, he read. Oh, I've heard about these ritual women, said Nobby dejectedly. I reckon she wants me to be a gigolo. Is that right? Nah, said the sergeant, looking at passion's most unlikely plaything. I know this stuff from my uncle. At home, it's like a bit of a drink stew. As for you, Nobs, Hobnob, Nobby, you just drink and scoff and talk about literature and the arts. I haven't got any petty cash. I haven't got any posh clothes, said Nobby. Oh, that's where you score, Nobby, said Colin. Uniforms is okay. Adds a bit of tone, in fact. Especially if you look dashing, he said, ignoring the evidence that Nobby was, in fact, merely runny. Is that a fact, said Nobby, brightening up a bit. I've got a lot more of them invites, too, he said. Posh cards, what look like they've been nibbled or along the edges with gold teeth. Dinners, balls, all kinds of stuff. Colin looked down at his friend. A strange and yet persuasive thought crept into his mind. Well, he said, it's the end of the social season, see? Time's running out. What for? Well, could be all them posh women what want to marry you off to their daughters who are in season. What? Nothing beats an earl except a duke. And we haven't got one of them. And we ain't got a king, neither. The Earl of Onk would be what they calls a social catch. Yes, it was easier if he said it to himself like that. If he substituted Nobby Nobs for Earl of Onk, it didn't work. But it did work with when you said Earl of Onk. There'd be many women who'd be happy to be the mother-in-law of the Earl of Onk, even if it meant having Nobby Nobs into the bargain. Well, a few anyway. Nobby's eyes gleamed. Never thought of that. He said, and some of these girls have a bit of cash, too. More than you, Nobby. And, of course, I owes it to my posterity to see that the line of Nobses doesn't die out. Nobby added thoughtfully. Colin beamed at him with the rather worried expression of a mad doctor who has bolted on the head, applied the crackling lightning to the electrodes, and is now watching his creation lurch down to the village. Of course, said Nobby, his eyes now unfocusing slightly. Right, but before that, said Colin, I'll do all the places along the shambles, and you do Chitling Street, and then we can push off back to the yard. Job done and dusted, okay? Afternoon, Commander Vimes, said Carrot, shutting the door behind him. Captain Carrot reporting. Vimes was slumped in his chair, staring at the window. The fog was creeping up again. Already, the opera house opposite was a little hazy. We are... Had a look at as many golems as we could, sir, said Carrot, trying diplomatically to see if there was a bottle anywhere on the desk. There's hardly any, sir. We found 11 had smashed themselves up or sawn their heads off, and by lunchtime, people were smashing them or taking out their words themselves, sir. It's not nice, sir. There's bits of pottery all over the city. It's as if people were just waiting for the opportunity. It's odd, sir. All they do is work and keep themselves to themselves, and don't offer any harm to anyone. And some of the ones that smashed themselves left notes, sir. Sort of saying they were sorry and ashamed, sir. They kept on going on about their clay. Vimes did not respond. Carrot leaned sideways and down, in case there was a bottle on the floor. And Gimlet's Whole Food Delicatessen has been selling poisoned rats. Arsenic, sir. I've asked Sergeant Colin Nobby to follow that one. It might just be some kind of mix-up, but you never know. Vimes turned. Carrot could hear his breathing, short, sharp bursts, like a man trying to keep himself under control. What have we missed, Captain? He said, in a faraway voice. Sir? I'm in his lordship's room. There's the bed, the desk, things on the desk, the table by the bed, the chair, the rug, everything. We replace everything. He eats food. We've checked the food, yes? The whole larder, sir. It is that a fact. We might be wrong, then. There, I don't understand how, But we might be wrong. There's some evidence lying in the cemetery that suggests we are. Vimes was nearly growling. What else is there? Littlebottom says there's no marks on him. What else is there? Let's find out the how, and with any luck, that'll give us the who. He breathes the air more than anyone else, sir, but we moved him into another bedroom. Even if someone was, I don't know, pumping poison in, they couldn't change rooms with us all watching. It's got to be the food. I've watched them taste it, sir. Then it's something we're not seeing, damn it. People are dead, Captain. Mrs. Easy's dead. Who, sir? You've never heard of her? Can't say that I have, sir. What did she used to do? Do? Nothing, I suppose. She just brought up 9 kids in a couple of rooms you couldn't stretch out in, and she sewed shirts for 2 pence an hour. Every hour, the bloody gods sent, and all she did was work and keep herself to herself, and she is dead, Captain. And so's her grandson, aged 14 months, because her granddaughter took them some grub from the palace. A bit of a treat for them. And you know what? Mildred thought I was going to arrest her for theft at the damn funeral, for God's sake. Vimes's fist opened and closed, his knuckles showing white. It's murder now, not assassination, not politics. It's murder, because we're not asking the right damn questions. The door opened. Oh, good afternoon, Squire, said Sergeant Cullen brightly, touching his helmet. Sorry to bother you. I expect it's your busy time, but I've got to ask, just to eliminate you from our inquiries, so to speak. Do you use any arsenic around the place, or... Don't leave the officer standing there, finally, said a nervous voice. And the workman stepped aside. Good afternoon, officer. How may we help? Checking up on arsenic, sir. Seems some's been getting where it shouldn't. Good heavens, really? I'm sure we don't use any. But do come inside while I check with the foreman. I'm certain there's a pot of tea hot, too. Cullen looked behind him. The mist was rising. The sun was going gray. Wouldn't say no, sir, he said. The door closed behind him. A moment later, there was the faint scrape of the bolt. Right, said Vimes. Let's start again. He picked up an imaginary ladle. I'm the cook. I've made this nourishing gruel that tastes like dog's water. I'm filling up 3 bowls. Everyone's watching me. All the bowls have been well washed, right? Okay. The tasters take 2. 1 to taste, and these days, the others for Littlebottom to check. And then a servant, that's you, Carrot, takes the 3rd one. Put it in the dumbwaiter, sir. There's 1 up to every room. I thought they carried them up. 6 floors. It gets stone cold, sir. All right, hold on. We've gone too far. You've got the bowl. Did you put it on a tray? Yes, sir. Put it on a tray, then. Carrot obediently put the invisible bowl on an invisible tray. Anything else, said Vimes. Piece of bread, sir. And we check the loaf. Soup spoon? Yes, sir. Well, don't just stand there. Put them on. Carrot detached 1 hand from the invisible tray to take an invisible piece of bread and an invisible spoon. Anything else, said Vimes? Salt and pepper. I think I remember salt and pepper pots, sir. On they go, then. Vimes stared hawk-like at the space between Carrot's hands. No, he said, we wouldn't have missed that, would we? I mean, we wouldn't, would we? He reached out and picked up an invisible tube. Tell me. We checked the salt, he said. That's the pepper, sir, said Carrot helpfully. Salt, mustard, vinegar, pepper, said Vimes. We didn't check all the food and then let his lordship tip poison on to suit his taste, did we? Arsenic's a metal. Can't you get metal salts? Tell me we asked ourselves that. We aren't that stupid, are we? I'll check directly, said Carrot. He looked around desperately. I'll just put the tray down. Not yet, said Vimesa. I've been here before. We don't rush off shouting, give me a towel, just because we've had one idea. Let's keep looking, shall we? The spoon, what's it made of? Good point. I'll check the cutlery, sir. Now we're cooking it with charcoal. What's he been drinking? Boiled water, sir. We've tested the water, and I checked the glasses. Good. So, we've got the tray, and you put the tray in the dumbwaiter, and then, what? The men in the kitchen haul on the ropes, and it goes up to the sixth floor. No stops? Carrot looked blank. Goes up six floors, said Vimes. It's just a shaft with a big box in it that can be pulled up and down, isn't it? I'll bet there's a door into it on every floor. Some of the floors are hardly used these days, sir. Even better for our poisoner, hmm? He just stands there, bold as you like, and waits for the tray to come by, right? We don't know that the meal which arrives is the one that left, do we? Brilliant, sir. It happens at night, I'll swear, said Vimes. He's chipper in the evenings and out like a light next morning. What time is the supper sent up? Well, he's poorly. Around 6 o'clock, sir, said Carrot. It's got dark by then. Then he goes on with his writing. Right. Well, we've got a lot to do. Come on. The patrician was sitting up in bed, reading when Vimes entered. Ah, Vimes, he said. Your supper will be up shortly, my lord, said Vimes. And can I once again say that our job would be a lot easier if you would let us move you out of the palace? I'm sure it would, said Lord Veterinary. There was a rattle from the dumbwaiter. Vimes walked across and opened the doors. There was a dwarf in the box. He had a knife between his teeth and an axe in each hand, and was glowering with ferocious concentration. Good heavens, said Veterinary weakly. I hope at least they've included some mustard. Any problems, constable, said Vimes. No, fur, said the dwarf, unfolding himself and removing the knife. Very dull all the way up, sir. There was other doors, and they all looked pretty unused. But I nailed them up anyway, like Captain Carrot said, sir. Well done. Down you go. Vimes shut the doors. There was more rattling and as the dwarf began his descent. Every detail covered, eh, Vimes? I hope so, sir. The box came back up again, with a tray in it. Vimes took it out. What's this? A clachy and hots without anchovies, said Vimes, lifting the cover. We got it from Ron's Pizza Hovel around the corner. The way I see it, no one can poison all the food in the city, and the cutlery is from my place. You have the mind of a true policeman, Vimes. Thank you, sir. Really, was it a compliment? Said the patrician. The patrician prodded at the plate with the air of an explorer in a strange country. Has someone already eaten this, Vimes? No, sir. That's just how they chop up the food. Oh, I see. I thought perhaps the food tasters were getting over-enthusiastic, said the patrician. My word. What a treat I have to look forward to. I can see you're feeling better, sir, said Vimes stiffly. Thank you, Vimes. When Vimes had gone, Lord Veterinary ate the pizza, or at least those parts of it he thought he could recognize. Then he put the tray aside and blew out the candle by his bed. He sat in the dark for a while, then felt under his pillow until his fingers looked at his small sharp knife and a box of matches. Thank goodness for Vimes. There was something endearing about his desperate, burning, and above all, misplaced competence. If the poor man took any longer, he'd have to start giving him hints. In the main office, Carrot sat alone, watching Dwarful. The golem stood where it had been left. Someone had hung a dishcloth on one arm. The top of its head was still open. Carrot sat for a while with his chin on one hand, just staring. Then he opened a desk drawer and took out Dwarful's chem. He examined it. He got up. He walked over to the golem. He placed the words in the head. An orange glow rose in Dwarful's eyes. What was baked pottery took on that faintest of auras that marked the change between the living and the dead. Garrett found the golem's slate and pencil and pushed them into Dwarful's hand, then stood back. The burning gaze followed him as he removed his sword belt, undid his breastplate, took off his jerkin, and pulled his woolen vest over his head. The glow was reflected from his muscles. They glistened in the candlelight. "No weapons," said Carrot. "No armor, you see? Now listen to me." Dwarful lurched forward and swung a fist. Carrot did not move. The fist stopped a hair's breadth from Carrot's unblinking eyes. "I didn't think you could," he said, as the golem swung again, and the fist jerked to a stop a fraction of an inch from Carrot's stomach. "But sooner or later, you'll have to talk to me. Right, anyway." Dwarful paused, then it picked up the slate pencil. "Take my words. Tell me about the golem who killed people. The pencil did not move. "The others have killed themselves," said Carrot. "I know. How do you know?" The golem watched him. Then it wrote, "Clay of my clay. You feel what other golems feel?" said Carrot. Dwarful nodded. "And people are killing golems," said Carrot. "I don't know if I can stop that, but I can try. I think I know what's happening." Dwarful. "Some of it. I think I know who you were following. Clay of your clay. Shaming you all. Something went wrong. You tried to put it right, I think. You all had such hopes. But the words in your head will defeat you every time." The golem stayed motionless. "You sold him, didn't you?" said Carrot quietly. "Why?" The words were scribbled quickly. "Golem must have a master." "Why? Because the words say so?" "Golem must have a master." Carrot sighed. "Men had to breathe. Fish had to swim. Golems had to have a master. I don't know if I can sort this out. But no one else is going to try, believe me," he said. Dwarful did not move. Carrot went back to where he had been standing. "I'm wondering if the old priest and Mr. Hopkinson did something or helped to do something," he said, watching the golem's face. "I'm wondering if, afterwards, something turned against them, found the world a bit too much." Dwarful remained impassive. Carrot nodded. "Anyway, you're free to go. What happens now is up to you. I'll help you if I can. If a golem is a thing, then it can't commit the murder. And I'll still try to find out why all this is happening. If a golem can commit murder, then you are people, and what is being done to you is terrible and must be stopped. Either way, you win, Dwarful." He turned his back and fiddled with some papers on his desk. "The big trouble," he added, "is that everyone wants someone else to read their minds for them, and then make the world work properly. Even golems, perhaps." He turned back to face the golem. "I know you've all got a secret, but the way things are going, there won't be any of you left to keep it." He looked hopefully at Dwarful. "No. Clay of my clay, I will not betray." Carrot sighed. "Well, I can't force you," he grinned. "Although, you know, I could write a few extra words on your chem, tell you to be talkative." The fires rose in Dwarful's eyes. "But I won't. Because that would be inhumane. You haven't murdered anyone. I can't deprive you of your freedom because you haven't got any. Go on. You can go. It's not as if I don't know where you live. To work is to live. What is it golems want, Dwarful? I've seen you golems walking around the streets. And working all the time. But what is it you actually hope to achieve? The slate pencil scribbled, respite. Then Dorful turned around and walked out of the building. Damn, said Carrot. A difficult linguistic feat. He drummed his feet on the desk, then got up abruptly, put his clothes back on, and stalked down the corridor to find Ingua. She was leaning against the wall in Corporal Littlebottom's office, talking to the dwarf. I've sent Dorful home, said Carrot. Has he gone out? Has he got one? Well, back to the slaughterhouse anyway. But it's probably not a good time for a golem to be out alone. So I'm just going to stroll along after him and keep... Are you all right, Caterpillar Littlebottom? Yes, sir, said Sherry. You're wearing a Carrot's mind rebelled at the thought of what the dwarf was wearing and settled for a kilt? Yes, sir. A skirt, sir. A leather one, sir. Carrot tried to find a suitable response and had to resort to... Oh. I'll come with you, said Angua. Sherry can keep an eye on the desk. A kilt, said Carrot. Oh, well, just keep an eye on things. We won't be long, and, just keep behind the desk, all right? Come on, said Angua. When they were out of the fog, Carrot said, Do you think there's something a bit odd about Littlebottom? Seems like a perfectly ordinary female to me, said Angua. Female? He told you he was female? She, Angua corrected. This is Ankh Morpork, you know. We've got extra pronouns here. She could smell his bewilderment. Of course, everyone knew that. Somewhere down under all those layers of leather and chainmail, dwarfs came in enough different types to ensure the future production of more dwarfs. But it was not a subject that dwarfs discussed, other than at those essential points in a courtship when embarrassment might otherwise arise. Well, I would have thought she'd have the decency to keep it to herself, Carrot said finally. I mean, I've nothing against females. I'm pretty certain my stepmother is one. But I don't think it's very clever, you know, to go around drawing attention to the fact. Carrot, I think you've got something wrong with your head, said Ingua. What? I think you may have got it stuck up your bum. I mean, good grief, a bit of makeup and a dress, and you're acting as though that she'd become Miss Va-Va-Voom and start dancing on tables down at the Skunk Club. There were a few seconds of shocked silence, while they both considered the image of a dwarfish striptease dancer. Both minds were built. Anyway, said Ingua, if people... can't be themselves in Ankh Morpork, or can they? There'll be trouble when the other dwarfs notice, said Carrot. I could almost see his knees, her knees. Everyone's got knees, perhaps, but it's asking trouble to flaunt them. I mean, I'm used to knees. I can look at knees and think, oh, yes, knees. They're just hinges and your legs, but some of the lads, Angua sniffed, he turned left here. Some of the lads, what? Well, I don't know how they'll react, that's all. You shouldn't have encouraged her. I mean, of course, there's female dwarfs, but, I mean, they have the decency not to show it. He heard Angua gasp. Her voice sounded rather far away when she said, Carrot, you know, I've always respected your attitude to the citizens of Ankh Morpork. Yes, I've been impressed by the way you really seem to be blind to things like shape and color, yes? And you always seem to care for people, yes? And you know that I feel considerable affection for you, yes? It's just that sometimes, yes, I really, really, really wonder why.